Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. I'm your host, Cale Clark. Today, of course, is the feast day, October the 4th, of St. Francis of Assisi, one of the greatest saints in the history of the church. He's well known, of course, for being a patron saint of ecology, and so many people have St. Francis statues in their gardens, you know, bird baths and everything. But he's known for much, much more than that, for his appreciation of God's creation, his canticle of the sun, you remember that. But he really transformed the church all around the world at a time when it really, really needed a revolution. It's been said that nobody's really lived out the teaching of Christ since the time of Christ himself better than St. Francis of Assisi. He was configured to Christ in such a powerful way, especially at the end of his life when he received the stigmata. But first things first, we need to understand that Francis wasn't always quite so Christ-like. He was born in Assisi, and his name at birth was Giovanni Francesco Bernardone. His father was a really wealthy businessman, a merchant in textile, and he was really living quite an ungodly life in many ways as a young man. In fact, one of his earliest biographers said this, quote, "He squandered his time terribly. Indeed, he outshone all of his friends in trivialities," end of quote. I guess he would have fit right in with today's society, and Trivial Pursuit is really the name of the game. It's not just an old board game, it's a lifestyle for many people, especially when you think about all the rabbit holes you can fall into online. And in fact, he really dreamt of military glory, a lot like St. Ignatius of Loyola. And in the year 1202, he actually entered a battle, and the battle was against the city of Perugia, and he really thought he was going to achieve glory through this, but it was anything but. He became a prisoner of war, and he was in prison for a long time. In fact, a year went by. His father, as wealthy as he was, he had a lot of trouble trying to get the ransom together for a young Francis, and in fact, he finally let him out with this ransom money a year after entering prison. Now, he had sort of had a rough time in this battle, and after he got out of the jail, it took him about a year to kind of rest, convalesce, get better. And Francis, who was, at this time, he was in his early 20s. This is the really, this time of life, this one-year period where he was getting better after being freed, that's really when God began to speak to him. He started getting dreams. He started experiencing visions. And we all know this famous detail from his life. One day he was praying in a church in San Damiano, and it was at the edge of the town of Assisi. And he famously heard Christ speaking from the crucifix. And this became known very famously as the Cross of San Damiano. I'm sure you've seen images of this. And Jesus spoke to him three times from that crucifix. "Francis, rebuild my house, which, as you can see, has fallen completely into ruin." So he heard this message three times, and he thought it meant this actual church of San Damiano, which was in pretty bad shape. But later on, the followers of St. Francis began to realize this was a call to reform the entire Catholic Church. Well, immediately, Francis wanted to repair this church, so he started selling off family possessions, and he was quite wealthy, of course, as you know. Well, his father eventually found out about this, and he was none too pleased. In fact, he dragged Francis before the bishop, trying to get him to change his ways. But this is really the turning point in Francis's life. He took off all of his clothes, including his underwear. We'll get into this in a little bit. Put him in a pile in front of his dad and said, "Hey, up until this day, you were my father, but now only my Father who art in heaven is my father." And so he walked over to the bishop, and from that moment on, he renounced his father, he renounced his inheritance, and he started this process of becoming a hermit. He wanted to live this life of solitude in which God alone could speak to him, and God did. God did. One day when he was at Mass, the gospel reading was from Matthew's gospel, and he heard these words from Jesus: "Take no gold or silver or copper in your wallet, no bag for your journey, nor a second tunic, nor a second pair of sandals, nor a staff." Well, of course, these instructions that Jesus was giving to some of his apostles and disciples as they were being sent out to preach, he took that to mean, yes, Jesus is speaking to me right now. And that's the living word. That's how scripture goes from written text to living word in the liturgy. This is what can happen. And so it really transformed his life. And that's what he wanted to do from that moment on. So he started to live this life of solitude and begging for alms. And we know that he would deal with himself quite harshly. He would throw himself into icy ponds in the wintertime. Whenever he felt the least twitch towards sensuality, he would just try to kill it as quickly as possible. He didn't want to fall into the sin of lust, so every time he spoke to a woman, he would never look at her. He would always look up at the sky or look at the ground, look at down at his feet. He didn't want to be tempted. And so this was really his lifestyle. And by this point, people started to notice him. They started to be intrigued by him, and they wanted to follow him and his lifestyle. And by the year 1209, and by the way, he was born in the year 1182, by 1209, there were kind of a band of brothers that had gathered around him, 12 men, kind of like the 12 apostles, who wanted to share in his ministry. I told you he was a lot like Jesus. He wrote this rule of life, and he went to visit the Pope in Rome. He wanted to get approval for what became known as the Franciscan Order, and in fact, he did get that. And Francis was elected Superior General of the First Order of Franciscans. Now, eventually, even women around the town of Assisi became very interested in the spirituality, and Claire, who was also from a wealthy background, St. Claire, you've heard of her, she was able to found the Second Order of Franciscans, also known as the Poor Clares. There's even a sort of a lay element to Franciscan spirituality. You might have heard of Third Order Franciscans, and he founded that, St. Francis did, in the year 1221. They kind of live a modified rule that suits more the lay state in life. So Francis would preach and beg for alms all over Italy. And he had some interesting experiences. At one point, he visited the Crusaders in Egypt. He crossed over the enemy lines, and he actually tried to convert the Sultan, the Muslim Sultan, to the Catholic faith. And he's lucky he escaped in one piece. In fact, the Sultan was so impressed by the sincerity of St. Francis that he actually said, you know what, I'm going to make sure that you get back home safely. I can't believe you had the guts to do this. And so soon enough, the Franciscans were sending out large numbers of friars that were growing quite rapidly on missionary journeys. They went to France, they went to Germany, they went to England, they went to Spain, they went to Hungary, they went even to Turkey, preaching the message of gospel. And this really a simple gospel, in obedience to the Sermon on the Mount, in obedience to the way of life that Christ enjoined. But it was really radical for that culture. Corruption was all over the place in the church and in the world. One of the great hallmarks of St. Francis's life was his humility. And as he went on and as the Franciscans began to get larger and larger, he realized that he wasn't up to the task of really being in charge. So he actually stepped back. He resigned as head of the order. And in the years leading up to his death, he did a couple of things that really the church is still in his debt for. He popularized the idea of the Christmas creche, the manger scene, which is just ubiquitous, not only at the Vatican every Christmas season, but even in our own homes. And that really was due to his efforts. He had a real devotion to the infant Christ. And then, of course, he received the stigmata. He was the first person to get the stigmata, the wounds that Christ had on the cross. He received them in his own body during this encounter in 1224, when he was on retreat, as it were, on top of a mountain. And he tried to hide the stigmata as well, just as Padre Pio, who received them, these marks in the 20th century, he tried to hide them initially as well. St. Francis did too. But eventually he became very, very ill and broken down, and even receiving these wounds of Christ probably didn't help his health at all. He eventually went blind, and just before his death, he finished the Canticle of the Son, the Canticle of Brother Son, which says this, "Praised be you, my Lord, with all your creatures, especially Sir Brother Son, who is the day and through whom you give us light." He also praised, of course, Mother Earth, Brother Fire, Brother Wind. But the end of the poem, people think, you know, kind of personifying creation here, but he brings it back to the gospel message. He talks about death, sister death, and he says, "Woe to those who die in mortal sin, and blessed are those whom death will find in your most holy will." And that's really what Francis tried to do. He tried to live the will of God in his life. And boy, did he ever do a great job of that. Well, he died in the year 1226. He was canonized only 2 years later, in 1228. I mean, this is lightning speed, especially when you think about the medieval church. But that's the reputation for holiness that he had. And soon afterwards, an enormous basilica was built in Assisi in dedication to him. The Basilica of St. Francis, which was completed about the year 1253. And I got a chance to visit Assisi on my honeymoon. My wife and I went to Rome for our honeymoon, and there's so much to do and see in Rome. We did take a side trip to Assisi, and it was very providential because while we were there, we ran into an American priest who offered to give us a tour not only of the city of Assisi, but also its magnificent Basilica of St. Francis. And man, this guy really, really knew his stuff. He actually did his doctoral dissertation on sermons that were preached in Mexico after the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe during that 8-year period when millions of people converted to Catholicism after her appearance. Boy, would I ever like to see those homilies. And so he just expertly explained everything in the Basilica to us. One of the great things about it, if you've ever been there, there are a number of beautiful frescoes in the upper church that are really scenes from the life of St. Francis. And if you've never seen these, you can Google the images. They are quite beautiful. They were thought to be done by this great artist named Giotto, but now we know that it really wasn't him. It was an unnamed artist, maybe from Giotto's school, kind of in that tradition. He was known as a master of the St. Francis style. But there's one particular fresco that always stood out to me, and it's really something that we talked about before when I was giving the life story of St. Francis. It's that time in his life when Francis renounces his inheritance, he renounces his former life, all his goods, all his money. He really enacts this by taking off all of his clothes and giving them back to his dad, Pietro. And it's just a beautiful fresco in this basilica. And what happens is he gives the clothes to his dad, including his underwear. And St. Bonaventure, describing the scene, he said, well, he took off his trousers, but by that he meant like everything. And that's important. We're going to get into that in a second. And what does he do? He goes over from his dad to his new father, the bishop. He walks over to the bishop, and there's this sort of gap in the scene, in the fresco, between the father and between the bishop. And what he does is the bishop enfolds the naked Francis within his mantle, his cloak. And Francis takes a cheap, sort of worn coat that he gets from a farmer who worked for the bishop, and he puts it on his body, and he takes a piece of chalk, and he draws a huge cross on the back of this cloak. And so, as St. Bonaventure said, writing about this, he said, "The servant of the Most High King was left naked so that he might follow his naked crucified Lord whom he loved." Yeah, we forget that. When Jesus was crucified, he was naked. The Romans did this to humiliate the victims of crucifixion. When Jesus came into the world, think about this Christmas creche that St. Francis popularized. Jesus was completely naked coming into the world. He was completely naked on the cross when he drove out the devil from this world. The prince of this world, Jesus says, will now be driven out. And he meant by what he was going to do on the cross. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. This is Cale Clark. And so there's this blank space, this big open space in the fresco that separates Francis's dad from the bishop. And Francis sort of goes from one side to the other of the painting. And you know what? There's a hand that comes out of heaven that's pointing towards Francis, pointing towards him. And Francis has his arms raised in prayer towards this heavenly hand. And really what the artist was trying to do is he was trying to separate the world the temporal realm, if you will, from the spiritual realm. And so Francis walks over to the side of Bishop Guido. And this is really the symbol of Francis entering into the spiritual existence. In the painting, he's covered in a glow of light. And in the background, you see architecture. You see the city behind the father. And that's kind of the world of the merchants, the world of wealth. And then you see on the other side, behind the bishop, the church. You see this image of the church representing, of course, the spiritual life. Now, this is what the religious are called to do. People like the Franciscans who take religious vows, they're called to really leave the world in order to pray for the world. For us as lay people, it's not that way. We have to live in the middle of the world and be contemplatives in the middle of the street. And so our vocation's a little bit different. But St. Francis was to radically leave behind everything that he had known, because Jesus called him to do this specifically. Think about what Jesus said in the Gospels. In Matthew 6:24, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, "No one can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and wealth." And we also read these words from Matthew chapter 10, and this really speaks to what happened between Francis and his dad. Jesus said, "I have not come to bring peace, but the sword. I have come to set a man against his father." He goes on to say, "Whoever loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me." And so I really want to focus on this theme of how St. Francis took off his worldly raiment, if you will. He took off the clothes that he wore as the son of a wealthy merchant, the soft robes, as it were, leaves them at his father's feet. And he really changes one kind of clothes for another outfit, and that is this very poor, very rough cloak on which he puts the sign of the cross. A beautiful meditation I once heard about this by Lawrence Cunningham. He talked about how when we change clothes, when we wear certain clothes to certain events and certain functions in our life, that's kind of a code that we all kind of go by. We don't dress for a funeral the way that we dress when we go to the beach. Hopefully not, although I have seen people wearing jeans at funerals. I can't believe that. But when we wear clothes, the clothes make the man. The clothes make the woman. The clothes tell us about the gravity of the event, what's happening. We think about uniformed officers in the military or in, for example, the police force or firemen. Their clothes signify their role. We think about a priest who puts on vestments to celebrate the Mass. We think about even the baptismal gowns that we put on babies and adults as they're baptized into the church, representing putting on Christ. And changing your clothes, this is all over the New Testament. St. Paul says this, "Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have stripped off the old self and have clothed yourself with the new self." Colossians chapter 3, verses 9 and 10. Or maybe even better, we have these words from Ephesians chapter 4, verses 22 to 24. St. Paul says, "You were taught to put away your former way of life, your old self, corrupt, debased by lusts, and to be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and to clothe yourselves with the new self, created according to the likeness of God." And the reason is that when we're baptized, we're clothed with this. And in the early church, by the way, people were baptized naked, just like St. Francis took off his clothes and went over to the other side. That's what early converts did in the catacombs in the early church period. They would be baptized in the nude. That's why men and women were baptized separately. You didn't have anything on. You went under the water. It was like a death. And then there's a resurrection. You put on this baptismal garment, representing the fact that you have now clothed yourselves in Christ. And so St. Francis, remember, he thought he could achieve glory in his life as a soldier. He thought putting on a suit of armor would be where he would find meaning in life. That was not to be. Instead, he put on a different kind of armor, the armor of God. And St. Paul talks about this in Ephesians chapter 6, putting on the armor of God so that you can stand against the wiles of the devil. St. Bonaventure, who in many ways followed in the footsteps of St. Francis of Assisi and wrote a biography of him, He talked about the fact that when Francis left his old outfit at his father's feet, walked over to the bishop, stark naked, but he takes a peasant's cloak, puts it around his shoulders. He first draws a cross with chalk on his back, on the back of this robe. And really, it makes Francis someone who carries the cross on his back. A little bit like a crusader, but not the kind of military crusader that everybody knew back in the medieval world. Not the kind of soldier that Francis once aspired to be. In fact, it was a soldier for Christ in a spiritual sense. And of course, in this painting, in this great fresco in the Basilica of St. Francis in Assisi, his whole body is covered in light. Again, St. Paul writes, "Cast off the works of darkness, put on the armor of light." And even to this day, when people join monasteries, when they step out of the world and into this religious life, when they put on their habit, they do exactly what St. Francis did. They leave aside their secular clothes and they put on the habit of a monk. It's quite significant, this custom, and it goes back to Francis himself. And just like in today's world, the Middle Ages were sometimes a time of great poverty. There was also a lot of people living in great excess. Sumptuous clothing was worn by the wealthy. And even in Dante's writings, he talks about the women of Florence, and he just warns them about all kinds of decadence that they were into, self-indulgence. And the friars, the Franciscan friars, in their rule that was written in 1221 by St. Francis, what kind of clothing are they supposed to wear? Well, it actually says, not, quote, "not to seek expensive clothing in this world so that they can have a garment in the kingdom of heaven," end of quote. And so, yeah, this was the kind of clothing that he wore, very rough, not at all extravagant. And this reminds us again of the words of Jesus when he was talking about John the Baptist. He was talking to the people about John the Baptist. And of course, we know how austere he was, how God called him to be, living out in the desert, wearing camel's hair outfits, you know, talk about a hair shirt, leather belt around his waist, eating nothing but locusts and wild honey, super kosher. What did Jesus say about him in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 11, verse 8? He says, "What did you go out to see?" You know, so many people were drawn to John out in the wilderness. What did you go out to see? Someone dressed in soft robes? No, look, those who are dressed in soft robes are in royal palaces. They didn't go out to see someone dressed in finery. They went out to see holiness. And that's why so many people were drawn to St. Francis as well. But once again, this idea of taking off his clothes, the nakedness of Francis when he begins his religious life, really talks and speaks to us in a powerful way about how he followed Christ. And St. Jerome used to mention this as well. He used to talk about nakedly following the naked Christ. Jesus was born naked in Bethlehem. He was later stripped naked by the Romans before he was crucified, of course, in an attempt to humiliate him. But this is something that the early church always loved, and this is something that St. Francis loved so much when he was popularizing the Christmas creche. The nakedness of the infant Jesus, that is an indication of his true humanity. And it also reminds us of the first human person, Adam. And Jesus is the second Adam. Adam, before he fell into sin, was naked and without shame. Jesus comes into the world completely pure, and he is crucified as naked as well. As a sign of shame, they tried to shame him, but he was without shame. He was still naked without shame because he was the innocent one. And so, in the tradition of the church, it's pretty amazing. When you think about the Christological hymn that St. Paul writes in Philippians chapter 2 about Jesus, though he was in the form of God, he did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited, but he emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being born into human likeness. And being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. and comparing Christ to Adam once again. Adam's fault was that he didn't humble himself. He, in fact, fell into the sin of pride, the same sin of the devil. And Satan tempted him, of course, in the garden. He tried to become equal to God. He didn't humble himself and plunge the human race into the ruin of sin. Well, Jesus was God. He was God, and he emptied himself. He humbled himself and enabled us to be saved. And he did this through the power of his wounds on the cross. And these are the wounds that St. Francis himself received. He united himself to the passion of Christ in a way that not too many other people have, but he was the first person to receive the stigmata. And so he really was configured to Christ in his life, in the stigmata, in his death. And he's such a powerful saint that drew people back to the gospel basics: poverty, chastity, obedience. Now, for those of us who aren't drawn to the religious life, who aren't called to that life, we still have to live versions of that life in the middle of the world. Poverty, chastity, and obedience, we have to live them too. We have to live poverty of spirit in the middle of the world. We have to live purity. Even if we're called to marriage, we have to live purity within our marriage. And of course, we have to renounce power. Money, sex, and power are really defeated by poverty, chastity, and obedience. These things are things that are in the world. They have to be brought under the cross of Christ. They have to be put underneath the cross, and we have to use them in the way that Jesus wants. And St. Francis hopefully can help us to do that and to look after everything in this great world that God has entrusted us with. This is Cale Clark for The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. Thanks for joining me today. And stay tuned. Coming up in the next few days, we've got our brand new series for the month of October, The Biblical Mysteries of the Rosary. It's the month of the Rosary, and I can't wait to share them with you. If you missed an episode, check the podcast. You can share them with a friend. Until next time, peace.